Morning. There we go. Good to see everybody here this morning. Glad you came out on a cloudy, gloomy fall Sunday in Rockford, Illinois. Tis the season, right? Sunday school hour and the disciple hour, we talked about the importance of confessing our sins to each other. So you all are about to hear my confession. It's a parenting confession, so you should enjoy this. Heidi's not in the room, so we can talk about this right now. I really like to go hiking, and sometimes I even am successful in talking to family and going with me when we go hiking. And I'll never forget, this was from when Francesca was little. So my youngest was 2, maybe? I don't really remember exactly how old she was. And we're hiking, you know, she's toddling around the best she can. And we get to a little creek that was along the path. Very little, not very much. There were little stepping stones to get across the creek. But we realized nobody wants to hike with a wet 2-year-old, right? So we decide that we are going to do a handoff with Francesca, right? She was little, so we were like this. Like, I was here, the creek is here, and Heidi's on the other side of the creek, right? So we do a 1, 2, and 3 with Francesca. And when we do that, the details are lost to history, right? We're not going to point fingers at who is to blame here. But I remember we were at a certain point where we realized I had Franny's legs and Heidi had Franny's arms. Well, she's no closer to being across the creek than she was before. And now she's hovering over the creek, right? And mom and dad are just kind of looking at each other like, well, now what do we do? How are we going to get out of this? Like, we're stuck, right? If any one of us lets go, Franny's going in the water. So we kind of look at each other like, we got to try this again. This isn't going to work. So what do? We count 1, 2, 3, and both of us let go of Franny. We drop her right in the creek. And then we both said, I thought you were going to let go. It was terrible. I will never forget this. And Franny's just smiling. She thinks it's hilarious. You know, she thought it was the greatest thing. I'll never forget, like, she totally trusted that her parents were going to keep her out of the creek, right? She thought this was a fun game. We did the opposite. We were terrible. We're paying for therapy now. It's going to be just fine. She's working through the trauma with her counselor because her parents are not trustworthy. We dropped her right into the creek. It was not our finest parenting moment. I bet a lot of parents have a moment like that where you realize, what on earth were we thinking? Can you imagine having that kind of trust that Franny had as an adult? Like how the situation would be me and Sherm and Brian Beck go for a walk and I don't want to get my feet wet, so I give Sherm my arms and Brian Beck my legs and I let them toss me over the creek. Would that ever happen? No adult would ever do that. I do not trust Brian Beck or Sherm Nichols enough to do that and keep me out of the water, right? But kids have no problem with that. Franny never once said, Mom and Dad, I'm not sure that you've thought this through very well, right? I'm not sure that you've really considered the best way to keep me out of the creek on this hike. So we've been talking about the core values of Central, who we are, like the nuts and bolts of what makes Central, Central. And I get the pleasure of talking about the very last one today. It's God-anchored trust. Trust that is just attached to God himself. When we, the leaders, kind of sat down and did all these brainstorming meetings to figure out what was essential, this was it. If we're going to do the big things that God wants us to do as a church, we have to be stuck to him, don't we? We have to absolutely trust that he is going to work through us and help us to accomplish the task that he has given us to do. I think that we have to individually have that kind of God-anchored trust. Like I, Brian Roeder, have to be stuck on God and trust him for the things that I do. And all of us have to do that. And then after we've got the individual part down, then we as a church can do things and trust God and be anchored to him. The Gospel of Mark tells really an amazing story. It's kind of a miracle within a miracle. It's one of the only times in the Bible where Jesus is about to do a miracle and then another miracle shows up and it's sandwiched between this miracle. It's a pretty cool story. One of the leaders of the Jewish synagogue comes up to Jesus and his name was Jairus, and his daughter was sick. And he goes up to Jesus and asks him to heal his daughter, right? That's already kind of amazing that that happened, that a Jewish synagogue leader would go up to Jesus and say, I need your help, my daughter's sick, is already kind of a little miracle in and of itself. Remember, we're not too far away in the Gospels from the Jewish leaders being outright against Jesus, right? So for one of the leaders to go up to him and say, I need your help, my daughter's sick, and I know you can do something, kind of already a miracle. On the way, Jesus is on the way to go see Jairus' daughter, and this happens. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? You see people crowding against you, his disciples answered, and yet you can ask, who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. And then Jesus goes on to heal Jairus' daughter. So it's like a miracle sandwiched between another miracle. It's kind of a great story. There's so much to unpack in this story. Like every Bible story that we read, we got to know what the context is. What was happening in culture? What was happening in history? Where are we at in the ministry of Jesus in order to really understand what is going on here? So Jesus is on the way to go see the synagogue leader's daughter. She's sick. And a woman who was subject to bleeding for 12 years was there. 12 years. Most commentators say that this was like a menstrual bleeding. For 12 years, this woman suffered with this. Paid everything she had to go to doctors to try and get better. Can anyone relate to that? It is not hard to go to doctors long enough to and then end up paying everything you had, right? This woman had nothing. She had done nothing but suffer with this issue for 12 years. And she went to doctor after doctor to try and get help, and nothing happened. She got worse, actually. The woman has social issues as well. We're not just talking about physical problems. So God's law in the Old Testament says that Jewish women who have this issue are unclean. That's a very important word in the Old Testament. It doesn't just mean dirty. Unclean means like socially you have to be separated from everybody else for a time. If a person was unclean, man or woman, they weren't allowed to go into the temple and worship with everyone else. They had to stay away. If a person was unclean, they had to stay away from people. They had to shout unclean as they were walking around so that people would know that they need to stay away from them. And she led this life for 12 years. Can you guys imagine the solitude? Like, you were socially cut off from society because of this issue for 12 years. I'm 44. So this means if this were me, the disease started 12 years ago. I was 32. My oldest was 13 years old. Franny had not yet been dunked in the creek, probably. It is really hard for me to imagine suffering with any illness for that long. That's a really long time. And it's hard for me to imagine the social issues that she faced. But I can't imagine being cut off from people for 12 years. I'm an introvert. I like to be alone, but not for 12 years. Can you imagine? Think of the solitude. How would you ever maintain any kind of friendships? Nobody was texting each other. Nobody sent her Facebook messages to make sure she was okay. She was alone. And think about the frustration of going to doctor after doctor after doctor after doctor, paying bill after bill after bill after bill, and 12 years later, you're worse. You're no better than you were when you started. And then this woman hears that Jesus is coming to town. she decides to go see him. Did you guys catch that there was a crowd around Jesus, right? That happened right in the middle of Jesus' ministry. He became very popular. People were always crowding around him. He had to work to try and get away from people. He sought solitude and had to move and go places to get away from people. But at this point, he has a crowd of people around him. This woman should never be in a crowd, right? She's unclean. Anyone who knew that who she was and would have seen her in that crowd would have yelled at her and said, get away, you shouldn't be here right now. What you have is going to spread to everybody else, right? You are unclean, get away. And yet here she is crowding around with everybody else just to touch Jesus' cloak. When I get to heaven, I'm going to talk to this woman. I have a lot of questions for her because I would love to know what was going through her mind when she said, I just have to touch his cloak and I'll be better. Did she originally, you know, as she was kind of thinking up this plan in her head, say, well, I'd really like to talk to Jesus face to face, but I know he'll never talk to me because I'm unclean. Maybe she kind of talked herself out of that and said, well, maybe I just need to get like in his vicinity, right? I need to get around Jesus' bubble. I wonder if she thought, well, Jesus is so powerful. I just have to be near him. I have to be in his presence and I'm going to be healed. I wonder if as she was walking and saw the crowd, I wonder, did she ever doubt and think, this is crazy. What am I doing? I'm not supposed to be here. I'm never going to get better. What? How crazy is it to think that all I have to do is touch someone and I'm going to be healed of this disease that doctors did nothing for in 12 years' time? I don't know. I'm going to ask her. We'll have dinner together, I think. In the end, she brushes against Jesus' clothes. You guys saw that. And then she gets caught. Jesus felt power go out of him. That's like sci-fi. She was behind him, and he knew that power had gone out from him to heal her. I don't know what that means, but that is an amazing line. And he asks, who touched me? The disciples get a little snarky. Did you see it? Jesus, all of us are touching you. Like you're in the middle of a crowd. How can you possibly ask, who touched me, right? I don't know. Sometimes the disciples get a little mouthy, I think. But when that happens, the jig is up, right? This woman is terrified. She's been caught as an unclean person touching this incredibly important man. Everybody put yourself in her place if you can. So women in this time were already a rung or two below men, right? And you are suffering from an embarrassing condition which prevents you from participating in normal life. Can't go to the market to buy food, so somebody's got to leave food at your doorstep because they can't even stop and talk to you because they'll be unclean. You're broke because you spent all your money on doctors. You're basically dependent on everybody else for them to help you for day-to-day living, right? And nothing's helped, and you've been dealing with this for 12 years. And the idea of touching Jesus' clothes is just your last-ditch effort to try and get better. I don't even understand the trust that is involved in that. Surely she knows about the miracles that Jesus has already performed in history, right? Otherwise, why would she be going to talk to him? She trusted that Jesus wasn't just going to rebuke her for even getting near him. She trusted that Jesus would care about her condition. There are sick people everywhere, right? Jesus himself said that there are going to be the sick people all the time. And yet he can say, I don't even have to ask him to help me. All I have to do is touch him. All I need to do is brush against his clothes and the issue is gone. That's the kind of trust that we need to have here at Central. As we've been planning and preparing for what's coming in the next 3 years, we're asking God to give us goals that are so big that he has to be involved if we're going to accomplish them. We're asking God to help us stay attached to him. I don't want to accomplish things that I, Brian Rodert, all by myself can accomplish, because then my goals are only Brian Rodert sized. right? I want to accomplish God-sized goals that only He could accomplish through us. We're trusting that God is going to give us the volunteers. We're trusting that He's going to give us the funds to do things that are going to impact Rockford, Illinois, the place where we find ourselves. And we're trusting that God's going to give us a boldness to reach lost people because we need to be bold. And we're all going to have to be anchored to God, stuck to Him. Because things are inevitably going to be rough. We are going to face opposition. Let me give you guys an example, okay? One of the teams that we've created is a team that is looking at the outreach that we do as a church, right? The things that we do to reach lost people. I'm a part of that team. And one of the things that has come up many times as we've gotten together for dinner to brainstorm and plan and how are we going to reach lost people in the next 3 years, one of the things that keeps coming up is how every single one of us has to be involved in this work. Every single one of us has to place evangelism in spot number one for the next 3 years. We've got a couple options, right? What if we train some kind of super evangelist, right? Jerry King. We pick Jerry King. And we pour all of our resources, all of our money, all of our time, all of our efforts in Jerry King. For the next 3 years, he is Central Christian Church's evangelist, right? If any single one of us has someone in our life that doesn't know Jesus, we call Jerry King and say, Jerry King, I know a lost person. I need you to get on him stat, right? We send Jerry to the best schools. We train him to be super evangelist. We pray that God gives him like a supernatural gift to evangelize all of Rockford, Illinois. How many people is Jerry King going to reach? Let's say he does one a week, right? Which is a lot. I mean, it takes time and effort and, you know, more than one meeting with persons. So that's 52 people that we get to reach per year through Central Christian Church / Jerry King. That's option one. Or, you guys know what option two is. All 200 of us decide that we are going to make this a priority. We are going to look at the people that are in our lives, the people that we work with, the people that live in our neighborhoods, the people that we go to school with, the guy at the post office, anybody that we know that is lost. Do you guys know any lost people? And all of us are going to make that the priority. How many people do you think we get to reach in 1 year if we all do that? Somebody tell me what 52 times 200 is. I forgot to do the math. But it's a bigger number, right, than Jerry King alone. And we really feel like this is what Jesus has called us to do. All of us have this burden that's been given to us by Jesus himself to reach lost people. Sorry, Jerry King, you're out of a job for the next year, okay? Guess which plan the elders and the outreach team want to put into place? You guys remember the story of David in the Bible? I almost didn't include this story because it's big, and you got to know a lot of Jewish history to get what's going on. But King David was the second king in the line of three kings of united Israel, and David was a good guy. He had his flaws, for sure, but the Bible itself says that David was a man after God's own heart, right? So David gets anointed to be king, but Saul is still king. Saul is king number one. Saul was not a great guy. He kind of followed God half-heartedly. It got worse as time went on. And when he heard that the new king had been anointed, he wanted nothing to do with him. And he tried for years and years and years to kill David, right? David was king number two. God picked him, but Saul wanted nothing to do with him. And so he chased him all over the place to try and kill him. David was incredibly humble. And he refused to usurp the throne and take over in any kind of forceful way or violent way. He said, hey, King Saul is God's chosen king. He's king number one. And so he refused to like speed things along and cut Saul's neck in the middle of the night, right? He actually, I think it's two times, David was within killing range of Saul, and he didn't do it. He left little signs to say, hey, while you were sleeping, I was in the room, but he never did it. He said, nope, Saul is God's man, and I'm going to wait for when things naturally take his place, which is totally unfair because Saul tried to kill him all the time. Keep in mind, David has skeletons in his closet. But there is this super interesting story in 1 Samuel that when I read this, I thought, only God could have done that. There is no way for David to have orchestrated that plan on his own. That is a supernatural thing. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 22. David at this point is on the run from Saul. He's hiding in a cave to escape, to hide. He doesn't want Saul to find him. Here's what it says. David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down to him there. All those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, and he became their commander. About 400 men were with him. It's one short little passage, but there's a lot in this passage. David's hiding in a cave, and I'm sure at more than one occasion he thought, how did I end up here? I have been anointed king of Israel, and I'm hiding in a cave from the previous guy. He's running from his life, but he is the legitimate king. Can you imagine how I would be so frustrated? I have a right to be on this throne. You know that that God himself anointed you, but the previous guy won't let go. As he sits in his cave, family members come around him. You guys saw that, right? His brothers and his father's household went down to hang out with him. And then this motley crew of misfits comes to hang out with David. Did you see the three groups of people? Those that were in distress, in debt, or discontented. This is not a Tom Clancy Special Forces group, right? In debt, in distress, or discontented. And he gathered 400 people around him, and all of those people called him Commander David. This is his army. This is how it started. This is not like something to write home about it and talk about these elite forces that you've gathered. It's more like King David and the band of misfits, isn't it? I'm not sure what went through David's mind as he saw these 400 men assemble. But I'm wondering if he ever thought, okay, God, this is my army. This is how it starts. You and only you could assemble this group of people. So I'm going to trust that you know what you're doing. I am going to anchor myself to you because I don't know what else to do. The road to the throne for David was super long. All kinds of twists and turns. He traveled all over the place running from Saul. He waited years before he became king. And remember, God himself is the one that said he was king. David had to trust God 100% to get rid of all the obstacles between him and being the rightful ruler. God gave him a job to do, and he had to stay fixed to God. Stay the course. Let me ask you guys a question. How can we as a church anchor ourselves to God to accomplish big goals? The jobs that he gives us to do. I said earlier, I think it's easier for us to answer that on an individual level first. How can you individually anchor yourself to God in order to accomplish the big job he has in front of you and me? All of us individually. That's a kind of a slightly different question, right? I have to do a job first. I have to be obedient and trust God first, and then we as a church can do something as a group. In our strategic planning over the last few months, we've tried to put our head together and figure out what is it that God would have us do? What is it that he would have us accomplish? And I really believe this. I believe this with all my heart, that he has put every single one of us exactly where we are right now to reach the people that are in your social circle. The people that God has put around you, not the people that randomly moved in next door. I really believe that God put your neighbors next to you because they need to know about Jesus and you know about him. He put us in our jobs in order to do that. He put us in the schools where we find ourselves in order to do that, in order to accomplish a very specific mission. You've all heard me say a million times, I say it a lot when I preach. I kind of sound like a broken record, but I feel like as follower of Jesus, our job is to tell people about Jesus. He said that, right? Right before he went to heaven. Jesus gave us the task of telling everyone we know about the things that he taught, the kind of life that he lived, about his death, about his resurrection. And I'll be honest with you guys, I feel adrift in my life. If I'm not actively seeking lost people in my life, I will naturally drift away from lost people. I think it's inevitable. I think we have to be very intentional about it because I like hanging out with you all, right? We have a lot in common. But then I realize I don't have lost people in my life anymore, and that's a really bad thing. It requires a ton of focus, a ton of drive, a ton of intentionality in order for us to keep the Great Commission, Jesus' commandment, for us to tell people about him at the top of the list. Let me ask you guys a question. When you all look around, do you feel like the world needs to know the things that we know about Jesus? When you all look around, do you feel like all of us are feeling the effects of a world that doesn't have the first clue about what it means to know Jesus? When you all look around, do you see the pain that people experience because they're living their lives according to their own plan and not God's plan? Do you see that? I see it. Church, we have the answers to all of those questions. The answer doesn't come from us. It doesn't come from our brilliant way of living. It comes from following Jesus and knowing him. And how selfish are we when we keep that to ourselves and don't share that with people? I get that it's hard. I get that it's unpopular. I get that we're going to likely face more and more opposition the further we go along. But doesn't the chance, just the chance, to be there when someone makes a decision to turn their life around and follow Jesus and change their entire eternity, doesn't that chance make it worth it? And doesn't it make sense for us as a church to grit our teeth a little and anchor ourselves to God, trusting that he is going to help us to be brave and be bold in order to get this crazy job done? You better believe it does. Hard jobs like helping people find Jesus requires everyone to pitch in, and it requires all of us to bury our roots deep into God and trust him that he's going to take care of us while we reach lost people. We want to become a church where the norm is that we are actively, all of us, telling people about Jesus. If we don't know anybody who's not following Jesus, if everybody around us is already a believer, then we find them. We find people that aren't following Jesus. We go into their social circles in order to find them and have opportunities to tell people about Jesus. I have to do that all the time. There's times when I look at my life and think, man alive, most of the people in my life already know Jesus. I have to find somebody. If we're scared to open our mouths to talk to people, we're going to pray hard and we're going to ask God for 5 minutes of courage. That's what it takes. I know every one of us is scared to tell people about Jesus. It's hard, but it takes 5 minutes of courage. And every single time in my life, I've seen that if I just get over that 5 minute hump, it goes great from there on out. If we don't know what to say, we're going to spend a little time and energy and effort and use our brains to figure out, how do we talk to lost people? What do we need to say? What questions are they asking? We're going to pray hard that we would be anchored to God, trusting that he wants us to be successful. Does he not want us to do a good job at this? Do you not think that he is going to bless our efforts? Does God want to reach lost people more than we do? Yes. He is going to answer that prayer every single time. That's what he sent his son to do. Isn't our God a God who saves people? Isn't he a God who fixes broken people? Jesus fixed the woman who touched his clothes, didn't he? Just like that. She had 100 reasons to not trust God. There were a million objections that she could have raised. She could have stayed trapped in her sickness, but she didn't. She trusted. She anchored herself to God, and she was healed for her faith. David could have given up. He could have assumed that God got it wrong, that maybe the prophet that came and anointed him was mistaken somehow, and that he was not ever intended to be king. If you keep reading the book of 1 Samuel, you got to wait a long time before David eventually becomes king. Saul's constantly chasing him, trying to hunt him down. I told you guys this. David has multiple opportunities to kill Saul. He doesn't do it. He's trusting that God is going to work out this little issue in his own way. He's trusting that God has a plan, and he watches while God assembles this ragtag army of people that are supporting him. And that is what we are going to do, church. Except I think we're the ragtag army in this illustration, right? That's us, the ragtag army of 200 believers of Central, doing everything they can to reach lost people in your life. I don't know what kinds of things you are facing in your life. I bet a lot. I talk to you all. I know that a lot of us are facing huge things, unfair things, hard things, physical things, spiritual things, emotional things. We're facing loss and grief and all the things that life throws at us. But I'm guessing that there's something that every one of us needs to be healed of, physically, spiritually, emotionally. Whatever it is, can we decide as a group this morning to get rid of that hurt? Let God heal it, to just grab his cloak and trust that he's going to make us better? Can we have the kind of faith that a woman who bled for 12 years had? It's a long time to deal with something. Let's give those things to Jesus. Let's anchor ourselves to him while we seek to do the big things that he has asked us to do. To be like David, willing to trust God's plans even when they don't make a lick of sense to us. And then let's trust God for just this crazy amount of courage to do what he wants us to do. And tell everyone we can about his son Jesus. You guys with me? Are y'all with me? No matter where you find yourself this morning, I think there is a place with Jesus for you. If you find yourself realizing this morning that you have not made that very first step, you've never trusted God with your life, with your eternity, then today's the day to do that. If you realize you have some hurts and baggage that you need to give to God so that we can move forward boldly as a church and do big things for him, then today's the day to do that. We have a song to sing. I hope you'll join me in singing it. And then I'll just have a couple remarks at the end, and I would love to visit with you. No matter what group you find yourself in, haven't yet started to follow Jesus, or man, do I need some help. Here's what's going on in my life. You can come find me after the service. I'll be here. Will you all pray with me? God, it's too big. The job that you've given us is too much for any of us to accomplish on our own. And I have no clue how we're going to do it without being totally anchored to you. God, it's not just reaching lost people. There's lots of things that we need to do. We need to seek justice for the oppressed. We need to take care of the poor. There's so many things that you have commanded us to do in this life, in this world, to bring your kingdom here to earth. And Father, I don't ever want to get discouraged. I don't ever want to feel the heaviness of that job, because I know that you are accompanying us. You are leading us and guiding us, and you want us to be successful. Help us, Father, to get our priorities straight starting today. Help us to trust you. Amen.